We are talking today with Robert Kerbeck, who wrote Malibu Burning. Great title, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Short and sweet.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, the Woolsey Fire that hit Malibu in 2018 was the most destructive wildfire to hit L.A., and many people haven't even heard about it, or they heard about it fleetingly and didn't know how bad it was.
I still find that fascinating, and I know it's true. My hometown is Philadelphia. I lived in Manhattan for a decade, and my relatives and friends were constantly telling me when the fire was burning and immediately afterwards that there was very little coverage of the fire on the East Coast. But basically, Malibu was, there's two halves of Malibu. There's the eastern half and the western half, and the western half was almost completely decimated. And the fire tried to get into the eastern half, and thank God it didn't, because otherwise Malibu would be, as we know, would be gone.
Nearly 2,000 homes and structures burned down, but yours wasn't one of them. In your book, you attribute that partly to a YouTube video?
Yes, my wife was a lot smarter than I am, and when we got news of the fire on the other side of the hill, and these fires are almost always accompanied by the Santa Ana winds, which are hurricane-force winds that blow extremely hot and dry, and of course they really fan these flames in a way that's kind of unimaginable. And so that night she was very nervous about the fire, and she looked up how to, we had some fire equipment, we'd never used it, but we had it, and she looked up how to hook into a fire hydrant, because we had some fire hose, and we had this fire retardant called Phoscheck, which you spray on your house, and my wife looked up and figured out how we did it, and sure enough, the next morning we got up and we saw this wall of flames coming over the horizon, and my wife said, you know, get out the fire hoses and get out the Phoscheck, and she told me what to do, and I did it, and as the flames were bombarding us, we sprayed our house with this fire retardant, and it's the same fire retardant the firefighters use, and we believe it saved our house because we have an all-wood Victorian home, and if any home should have burned on our street, it should have been ours, and instead our house survived, and 17 of 19 on our street burned to the ground.
It's almost like the hand of divine providence or something, that she watched that video the night before, was fresh in her mind, and you had all the equipment there, and you were able to act. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think in any situation like this, when it's a fire that is, you know, what they were calling a 1% fire, like a Superstorm Sandy kind of event, that you've got to have some luck. So, you know, I'm sure we had some luck somehow, some way, but we had really good brush clearance on our property, which I think is something that a lot of homeowners here don't have, even though the fire department really stresses it. I think a lot of homeowners, you know, they have a lot of trees that are flammable trees. You know, there are a couple of types of trees that are not native to California, but they've really gotten hold here, eucalyptus trees and pine trees. These trees are very flammable, and I think that really kind of exacerbated the danger for everyone, because if one home catches on a street, it makes it much more likely that another home can catch, and if two or three homes catch, then it makes it much more likely that you're going to lose a whole street or a whole neighborhood. And that's something I'm hoping that, and I know a lot of homeowners learned that lesson, because I've seen neighbors just cutting down trees like crazy now, because I think people were like, okay, this was a message, and we've got to learn our lesson, because as you see in the news, California is having this epidemic of wildfires, and we all have to do better.
Right. I have family not far from you, and it seems there are these wildfire scares seem to be happening all the time these days. Have you thought about leaving?
It's sad. Yes, we have. I mean, we have a son. He's 17. He helped us fight the fire. He was very brave, but he's, you know, gone to school in Malibu with the same kids from preschool. So, you know, the same school all the way through, and now he's a junior in high school. And we've asked him about it, and of course his answer is no. You know, he wants to finish his last year and a half at Malibu High, and I can't blame him for that. And so we are going to stay. This fire was so bad, it burned so much that I think probably we're not going to have a fire like that again where we are for some years, because, you know, it takes time for this brush to build up again. So I think we're safe for a while, but I know a lot of people aren't rebuilding, and I know a lot of the burned out lots, people are hesitant to buy here now, and insurance has become a big problem. It's really kind of exacerbated the tragedy, because a lot of people now are finding it extremely difficult to rebuild. And then, of course, maybe they can't even sell their lot because people are nervous about buying here.
The most frightening and hard to believe part of your book, and I found myself like gripping the pages because I was so mad, was how some firefighters would just be parked by the side of the road while homes burned. What was that about? Were they out-of-towners, or was it a chain of command kind of thing? Or what was it, as you understand it?
Yeah, and I appreciate that. You know, again, I'm from the East Coast, so the idea of firefighters showing up and not fighting the fire was just incomprehensible to me. And yet, I did over 200 interviews for this book, and over, that's what people were telling me. And a number of those people were elected officials, so I knew it was true. And I think it was a number of things. I mean, first of all, we had this 1% fire, and I think the fire department was overwhelmed. And we also had, the fire was so bad, it melted everything. It melted every cell tower. And so communications became extremely problematic. So orders weren't being received, orders weren't being given. And a lot of firefighters were coming from outside the area. They didn't know where they were. They didn't know where to go. And I think some firefighters were just simply, they just hadn't seen this kind of fire before, and their focus was keeping their crew safe. So it was a difficult situation, because there were a lot of firefighters, and I interviewed a number of them in the book, and they were going over to these other firefighters saying, you know, what are you doing? You know, you can save these homes over here. Let me show you how to do it. Yeah. Back your engine in so you don't get stuck. And yet there were engines that said, no, we're not going to engage. And that was one of the big tragedies for homeowners, because there were, I have countless stories, some of them not even in the book, of homeowners begging firefighters to get out of their engines and help. And in some cases, they wouldn't even get out and look at the situation, and they wouldn't even assess whether they could save some homes. And that was, for me, also really, really hard to take.
We've heard about some of the wealthy, and I realize that Malibu isn't all about wealthy stars, but we heard about some of the wealthy hiring their own private firefighters. Have you been hearing about that?
You know, it's funny. There's a new TV show, The Morning Show, on Apple
yes.
TV. And
yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
And did you saw they had one episode
yes.
that had sort of a fictional wildfire, and they talked about wealthy people hiring firefighters.
Yeah.
While I think that certainly did happen, and I know it did happen, it was very rare, because what happens with these fires is, and especially with the Woolsey fire, again, the fire front was 14 miles long. So imagine that. You have flames 14 miles long.
Wow.
Firefighters try to keep fires very skinny so they can control them. And when a fire gets wide like that, they can't control it. It's out of control.
Wow.
And so when this happens, first of all, the roads were shut down. All of the canyon roads from the valley down to the beach, all the power poles came down from these 70-mile-an-hour hurricane-force winds. So the roads were blocked. There was no way for people to get in. And so the only way kind of in and out of Malibu was the Pacific Coast Highway. Many of your listeners, if they've been out here, of course, they've driven up and down the Pacific Coast Highway. Mm-hmm. And that road was blocked by the sheriff. So the only people that could get in were first responders. And in most cases, these private firefighters, they're not considered first responders, so they're not able to get in. They're not allowed to come in. So unless they were in before, and again, nobody knew this fire was going to be this bad, so there were really very few firefighters, private firefighters, that actually got in time to fight the fire. Now, I know some got in later, but by later, the fire had already, you know, after two or three days,
late.
The fire had done what the fire does. It had burned most of the home. So that kind of story, and like I said, on Apple TV, that episode, it's not really accurate. I know there's a fear there that, wait, why are the rich getting these private firefighters, and why isn't everyone else getting them? That really did not happen, hardly at all. And in all the interviews I did, I only heard one interview about private firefighters, and they came in a couple of days after the fire, and they were kind of there just to make sure that there wasn't a flare-up, because, you know, what happens sometimes is these embers, you know, all these homes had burned, and there were these embers, it was hot, and if the winds picked up, which they did, it was possible, and everyone was afraid that those embers were going to get fanned again and land on a house that didn't burn in the initial firestorm. And that's when private firefighters were around. But the private firefighters I interviewed, not one of them actually fought flames.
Okay. How are our kids coping following the fire, especially since so many of them lost their homes? And how do you deal with that? You said you had a son. He's now 17. How are the kids coping, and what are adults doing to help them along?
You know, that was the saddest chapter for me. I wrote a chapter in the book. It's called A Student's Loss, and it profiles this young woman, Nina, who was a friend of my son. She was 2 years older, and they were in the theater group together. And they were scheduled to do this play, Spring Awakening, which, you know, has been done on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the schedule was the weekend right after the fire, so the show was canceled. And then they rescheduled the show, and then the show was canceled because of mudslides, which, of course, often occur after these fires. And sometimes, tragically, in the Thomas Fire, which was the year before in Santa Barbara and Ventura, the Thomas Fire, the mudslides killed more people than the fire did. The mudslides killed over 20 people. So the mudslides are really a major problem as well. So the show was supposed to go on a couple of months after the fires. Then the mudslides canceled it, and it just kept getting canceled. And these kids rehearsed this show for 5 months.
Wow.
Three of the kids in the show had lost their homes. They could have canceled. If just one kid backed out of the show, the whole show would have been canceled, because there was no way to replace somebody at this point. And yet these kids continued. And it really was an amazing story about resilience, that here are these children who had been through this tragedy. A number of the kids had lost their homes. They really wanted to do this show. And so when they finally did put the show up, of course, the theater was, I mean, forget about packed. I mean, people were, you know, hanging on the proverbial rafters. It was everyone in the city had come out for this show. And at the end, and I get choked up now even remembering it, I mean, every single person was sobbing. Everyone in the audience was crying, because we were so proud of these children.
And how is your son coping?
You know, I've asked him that. He's a sort of a typical young man. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if you have a male teenager, they sometimes don't talk much. They eat a lot, but they don't talk a lot. So he, you know, and I've asked him a number of times, and in the beginning, he wasn't sure, you know, when we were, you know, getting out the equipment, he wasn't sure we were making the right decision. But now that we saved our home, and of course, he has so many friends who lost their homes, and he sees what they're going through, you know, again, your listeners maybe don't know, but when these fires come through, they burn so hot, they burn everything. So everything is gone. The only thing that remains in most cases is the chimney. Your car's melted, your washer and dryer melted, your refrigerator's melted, everything is gone. The Red Cross, they handed out sifters, like they used to use in the Gold Rush. Imagine an old movie, and the guy's got this sifter with a little mesh screen, and people would go through the remains of their homes with these sifters trying to find anything that survived. And in most cases, they found nothing. So he knows what his friends have gone through, but I think it's difficult. And to be quite frank, I think that the effects of the fire are still ongoing, and for a lot of these kids, they're not going to know what the effects are for many, many years. You know, the schools in Malibu are in the same neighborhood that was the most devastated, which is our neighborhood. We lost 180 of 275 homes. These schools survived because they were lower down in the neighborhood, but the fire burned right up to the campus, and then for weeks afterwards, anytime the winds blew, the remains of people's homes, the soot and ash from people's homes, would burn right at the school. And the school was constantly covered in this super fine, thin, black soot, which, of course, has got to be tremendously toxic. You know, I think that the health ramifications are going to go on for some time. Fortunately, now the homes and all the debris has been cleared. Theoretically, it's safer now. But for quite some time, the air and the living conditions here really were not great. They really weren't.
Do you feel angry, or how are you feeling? Now, it's almost 2020, and this was 2018, but that's like the blink of an eye, really.
I mean, I think anger isn't the right word. I have been disappointed in because what I say in the book, and you know, you read the book, so yeah. I talk about everybody's got to do a little better. We have this epidemic of wildfires. We've had 4 of the worst 10 fires in California history in the last 2 years. We had fires recently, multiple fires burning every day. We almost lost the Reagan National Library and the Getty Villa Museum in the same day. So you're not just talking about losing, you're talking about everything. You're talking about losing homes. You're talking about people losing their lives. You're talking about losing national monuments and national facilities. So I think everybody has got to do better. And I talk about how homeowners can do better. There's some very simple things homeowners can do. Ember-resistant vents are really important to prevent embers from getting inside your home. Most people don't have them. They're really inexpensive to install. That's one thing homeowners can do. I talked earlier about the brush and clearing your flammable brush. But the authorities, too, of course, there are many things they can do. And I've been really shocked at how few things they've done to make California much more fire safe. And that's been very disappointing.
But isn't that always the case? I mean, Hurricane Sandy was 7 years ago, and some homes have yet to be rebuilt, and not much has been done in many cases, too.
The locals called this fire the yo-yo fire for you're on your own.
Why am I laughing? It's terrible.
I know, but you know, and I think it's a good lesson for homeowners anywhere. You know, as you know, many of your listeners went through Superstorm Sandy. Yep. So you've got to go, okay, what can I do to be more prepared? What supply should I have on hand? What kind of food and water should I have? And I think that those are just important things. You know, California, we have earthquakes. So the idea of being prepared, I think, is a really important thing. And the lesson that came out of this Woolsey fire is that you cannot count on help. And even if help comes, it might not be willing to help. And it's not the last fire that we're going to have, unfortunately.
You know, we really are on our own. At least you can make some preparations for yourself as an individual and your family.
We have found this amazing coming together of the community and of neighbors. And so,
that's
you know,
good.
Now there are neighbors, you know, I mean, I knew all my immediate neighbors, but there were people, you know, a street over, a street down, I didn't know. I know so many of my neighbors now. And we've gotten together, we've done tests of fire equipment, and we've shared information on things to have. We've created, the old phone trees, which kind of went out of fashion, but in a catastrophe, when the internet goes away, all of a sudden you realize, boy, you really need to know all your neighbors, and you need to know who's in every home, so that if there's an older person who's going to need some help, you know to go check on them. So that's been kind of the silver lining, is the neighborhood has come together in a way that is really breathtaking.
Your book was unforgettable, and I enjoyed it so much. And thank you for writing it, and best of luck to you.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me, and I really appreciate the opportunity to give, you know, some of this information, these stories out to people that don't really understand, you know, well, what the heck's going on in California.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.